The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaq and Hislop. Later on in the show, Matteo Bonetti, Gab Marcotti and Jurgen Klinsmann will be here to reflect on a huge win for Inter in the Milan derby. We'll start, though, in the Premier League. And pretty much as you were at the top, Manchester City beating Arsenal by 1-0. Manchester United beating Newcastle by 3-1. Leicester City with that 2-1 win away against Aston Villa. And West Ham, fourth in the table after a 2-1 win against Spurs. Well, let's welcome in, shall we? For the very first time, welcome Nader Manua to the show. We also welcome, certainly not for the first time, Frank LaBeouf is back with us like a bad smell. Let's start, shall we, by reflecting on that win for Spurs.
The win for West Ham against Spurs.
And Nader, what's going on with Spurs?
It just seems like they've run out of confidence. I think at the start of the season, they had a certain style, which was to drop back and try and hit teams on the break. But when that doesn't work anymore, what's next? And I think from what we saw today is that ultimately the team, they struggle to break down sides who just say, come and try and take us.
It's an incredible run that they're on, Frank. The fact, six defeats in their last 8 matches. And yet again today, the first half terrible, and it was just too little too late.
Yeah, and there is not much explanation to that, but why didn't start the game during the first minute and play, you know, pretty well the second half? You could have said, you know, they're tired because of the European campaign and because they too much defended for like 6-7 months, or maybe they're paying the price of too much defending, too much running for maybe nothing against the ball. But it's not the case, because what they showed in the second half is a desire to go forward, a desire to try to equalize, and they did pretty well. You know, they had a lack of chances, I would say. But West Ham held it very well.
Mourinho, some great stuff afterwards. Shaq is saying, me and my coaching staff's methods are second to nobody in the world.
But he would say that. he would say that. It is Jose Mourinho after all. And let's be honest, every coach would say they're the best at what they do. But given what you saw from Spurs in the first half in particular, of course the neutrality is going to question that. I thought Spurs were very predictable, if not one-dimensional, in the first half. And it's only when they introduced the likes of Bale in the second half and allow the likes of both Son and Mora to drift out wide and do a bit more in the wide areas that they became a team that excited you. In the first half, as I watched Spurs attack West Ham, you knew exactly what was going to come. Everything was coming down the left-hand side. Whenever Reguilón got on the ball, he was going wide or trying to get to the byline. He was never coming inside. Mm. When Mora or Son got it, they were coming inside. They were never trying to go wide. So you knew what was coming. And West Ham caught with it very easily. And in the end, only when Spurs needed a reaction, got it. But it was a little too little too late.
And then he was asked about Gareth Bale afterwards, saying, I cannot say everything to you. Kind of this veil of secrecy that seems to continue with the relationship between these two. Bale did, though, make a difference, didn't he, in the second half?
Yeah, he certainly did. But one thing I'd say is that in the second half, when West Ham have the lead, Spurs have to go forward. You know, the ebb and flow of the game changes. West Ham didn't feel the need to go forward like they were doing in the first half. And seeing someone like Gareth Bale come on there, yes, he's a threat, but they've got a lead to hold on to. And with regards to the whole Bale-Mourinho thing, I think seeing those two personalities go head-to-head, for me personally, I find it quite exciting, because you look at someone like a Jose Mourinho, he says there's some things he can't say, but in saying that, he's saying something. So he always provides the entertainment. And I'm sure Gareth Bale, maybe on Twitter or Instagram, will say nothing as well, if you know what I mean. And you can try and figure out what they're trying to say from there.
Frank, reading between the lines, what do you make of the Gareth Bale-Mourinho situation?
I don't know, maybe something personal happened between them. Maybe something in Gareth Bale's life happened. We don't know. We don't want to presume anything. What we want to see is somebody getting back to his best, maybe getting his fitness back, you know, at first, and see how he can deal. But today, the first time, you know, I see Gareth Bale, you know, back to what I know about him. And it's encouraging. And, well, if Gareth Bale is in good shape, he has to play. He's going to be very helpful, but he has to go back to his best.
We're not talking about the big story, though, Shaq, surely.
Was that the 2021-2022 European Champions West Ham?
Top four, Shaq.
Can you imagine? Listen, I'm credited to West Ham and David Moyes. I was a little critical of the, critical of the appointment, but he has his team playing wonderful football. And they are top four, not by fluke, not by accident. They fully deserve to be there. They fully deserve the points against against Spurs today. Long may it continue. We see this West Ham doesn't have the squad that others do, but in this most unusual of seasons, they're somehow making it work.
Nedim?
I was going to say, Shaka, so obviously you're a West Ham man. And one thing about David Moyes, which he keeps saying, you know, we're winning games. We've not hit our best yet. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if what he speaks of is actually a thing. Do you believe they can get better, or do you think this is them at their absolute peak?
Well, this is as good as I've seen West Ham for a long time. So I guess, it's a little maybe naive of me to think that it's going to get a whole lot better. But you look at the differences that the signings in particular have made, Suchek and what he's brought to that team, and most recently, Jesse Lingard, having a person who naturally plays in that hole just in behind the front man. And again, the difference he's made to the team, the difference he's made to Michael Antonio. So another couple of additions, who knows? But right now, I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. I'm enjoying the ride.
Meanwhile, you think, right, on paper, the game that we would have started with would be Arsenal against Manchester City. City winning it by 1-0, Raheem Sterling with the goal. But the thing is, Frank, there isn't actually that much to say about this game, is there?
No, I enjoyed the first 5 minutes of it, and after it was quite boring. It's like the shirt that Manchester City was wearing today. You know, was like a pyjama. I think they were ready to go for a little nap, and that's what it is. That's it. I saw nothing from City because I think they did in the minimum, and it's like that way. We know we don't have to force. We know that with one goal ahead, we're gonna handle Arsenal pretty well, and it's what they did. I didn't see Arsenal being a threat whatsoever. And I didn't like Manchester City because they didn't try to kill the game. But it's what it is. They got that goal, 3 points, bye-bye. Go back to Manchester.
That was it. No, it was as simple as that. That's now 18 matches in a row that they've won.
Yes, it's absolutely outrageous. And as Frank was saying there, City just did enough. And we can criticise them all we want, but I think, you know, in other games, you've seen them get really expressive, score lots of goals, keep lots of possession, create lots of chances. But at this stage of the season now, I think they understand that they just have to keep winning. If they want to try and achieve their goal of maybe getting 4 trophies this year, performance is a thing, but results are the bigger thing. And I think you're probably going to see more games like today going forward, as opposed to the ones where we've seen them open up teams and get 5 or 6 goals.
What do we say about Arsenal in this clash, Nedim?
You know, conceding a goal so early, especially at home, in some ways, it probably took pressure off them. So I think their performance overall, for as much as it wasn't incredible, it was one whereby they, you know, they could try and play with a little less fear. They had less pressure on them because, you know, what everybody expected from the outside in terms of City taking a lead, it happened so early. And they're not the worst team in the world, Arsenal, but it's a shame that at this point, based on what we were used to with Arsenal, the fact that their biggest asset this year is the fact they've got the third best defensive record in the Premier League. It's not something that I would necessarily want to see on a week-to-week basis, but it's something that I believe will probably provide hope for them going forward.
Frank?
Yeah, well, you know, what do you want to expect? You know, they're getting better. In December, you know, we're talking about Arteta being sacked, that Arsenal will have a hard season. Well, they're not at the top, and we know they don't deserve to be at the top. That's it. I think 1-0... it's the minimum. Maybe it's a deal between Arteta and Guardiola.
Nathan, the talk now with Manchester City is not obviously if, but when they'll win the Premier League. And then it leads to whether or not they can do the quadruple. Obviously, still very much favourites to win the three other competitions that they're in. Do you think they can do it? Champions League, FA Cup, League Cup and the League?
Oh, do you know, so I've got to come out and confess to all the fans out there. Yes, I am a Man City fan. So yes, I believe they can do it. But the reality of the situation is it's a tough call. It's a tough order, especially, I believe, in the Champions League. The Premier League seems to be looking after itself at this moment. The Carabao Cup, they're heavy favourites because they're playing against a struggling Spurs side. You never know in the FA Cup. But like I always refer to, the Champions League is just that bit different. When you have certain teams are always making it into the quarterfinals, the semi-finals, they're the toughest nuts to crack. But with City, if they can go on a good run, if they can get a good run of good draws as well, anything is possible. But I don't think they'll get the four, but I'll be more than happy with three.
But one of them has to be the Champions League, doesn't it, Frank? They're the best team in Europe at the moment. You look at the other contenders, they've got their frailties. So if City are going to do it, they really should be doing it this year.
Yeah, in the power ranking of Shaka,
oh,
you know they're in the top
attention
of
to
the
that.
World, you know. Well, well, you should, because maybe for once you can be right, you know, you never know.
For once?
But that's the truth. Well, yeah, that's the truth for once, you know. But that's the reality of it, you know, when we compare Bayern Munich and Manchester City right now, Manchester City does the job. And they can do the quadruple. They can, of course, they're going to aim the Champions League. I think they're ready to lose everything if they can win the Champions League, because they are chasing that, you know, for so long, for more than a decade. And I think they really have to win that competition. That I'm sure.
Meanwhile, Manchester United beating Newcastle by 3-1. They made hard work of it in the first half. Nowhere near at their best. Getting it done in the second half, Shaq.
Yeah, they did. And in all honesty, this kind of game played out exactly as I would have thought. Darlow beaten at his near post by Rashford for the first. Then I thought Newcastle had their best spell, got back into the game. But you saw Manchester United open themselves up and extend that, extend their own dominance and go on to win the game in the second half. But it, as somebody who follows Newcastle, as a Newcastle fan, you know what you come up against when you meet Manchester United. Our record isn't great against them. I think Steve Bruce as a manager as well, his record isn't great, of course, kind of when you look at who he's managed. This is Manchester United back to their free-flowing best, getting 3 points. I'm not going to say keeping pressure at the top, given the gap between them and City, but certainly with a tightening top four race, exactly what the doctor ordered.
Now, it's a little bit like the City victory, isn't it? Manchester United are better than Newcastle. We kind of knew that beforehand.
Yeah, I think if Newcastle would have had anything from today's game, I'd be calling it a huge shock. Manchester United are a very good side. And, you know, if City hadn't been on the run that they'd been on, you know, it would essentially be a title race. So, you know, United did what they needed to do, and the first half wasn't great, but they find a way to do it. And looking at the league table there, you can't rule out the chance that they could make it tighter. You can't rule that out. The odds are very much stacked against them, as you can see in that 1-1,000. But United still have a job.
Yeah, then the odds
and with the derby coming up in just a few weeks as well, yeah, maybe the momentum can kick on and help them out a little bit.
They're the odds to finish in the top four as it stands, Frank. City United looking good. Leicester City as well solidifying their place in third after that win against Aston Villa. We saw Leicester, didn't we, just struggle a little bit last season. They threw it away and didn't qualify for the Champions League. But they look like they could get it done this year, Frank.
Well, and they deserve it because they're very consistent, especially away from home, where they mostly win all the games they play. They work together and they do what they have to do to make sure they're going to win. And every weekend we're going to say, okay, they're going to play that team, we're going to play that team, maybe they're going to collapse, and they still win. And they're very, very good. I think they deserve to be in the first four. Well, they were in my prediction in the first four at the end of the season. I really hope they're gonna stand to it, you know.
Do you think they can hold on, Nathan?
Yeah, I think they can, yeah. think they can. As Frank was saying there, and obviously Frank knows best as a world champion. Like they're a very consistent side. So with that type of ability and with the coaching that they have and the players that they have, it wouldn't surprise me if they were maybe even second come the end of the season, to be honest.
Nedim, thank you very much for joining
us. I just want to say something, Nedim.
You're going to mention you're world champion again.
I just want to say welcome to Nedim. He seems to be a very nice guy.
It's an honour, Frank, it's an absolute honour to be world champion.
Oh my God. We're going to send Stevie round to try and fix your internet, Nedim. Let's maybe we can get that connection a little bit cleaner. I can confirm as well that Stevie did fix Nedim's Wi-Fi connection. He joins us along with Frank and Shaka on Extra Time. You can check that out over on YouTube.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Let's head to Italy, where the big story on Sunday was Inter Milan beating AC Milan by 3-0. Lautaro Martinez with a brace. Romelu Lukaku, brilliant as well. Well, let's welcome in Gab Marcotti, Matteo Bonetti, and former Inter Milan striker Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen, let's start with you. Almost a perfect day for Inter.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost a perfect day. I think Inter started really, really well. Obviously, we had the early lead. And then, before halftime, AC Milan got a little bit better into the game. They had their chances right after halftime, as you guys just showed now. But then, obviously, the combination of Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku is just on full speed at the moment. You know, both combined basically for all three goals and make a huge, huge difference. And this is, psychologically, it's a huge win. That means a lot to the fans. It means a lot to Antonio Conte. And as you could see how they were celebrating, it means a lot to the team. I think overall, it was a very, very good performance from the entire team. First half, you know, I saw Perisic doing extremely well on the left flank. Barella was all over the place. Great performance by the entire team of Inter.
Big statement, Gab.
It's a huge statement. And, it's hard to single somebody out. As Jurgen said, it really was a team performance. I'm going to single two guys out as well, which Conte touched upon after the game. Christian Eriksen in the middle of the park and Perisic in the wingback role. You know, these are two guys who were brought in for different roles, different positions. They spent a lot of time on the bench. Eriksen, of course, was supposedly the persona non grata there. But now that he's stuck with them, Conte found a way to get the best out of them, to make them an important part of this team. Perisic balancing out Ashraf Hakimi on the other flank, and Eriksen giving you a second guy in midfield who can pass and playmake, an alternative to Brozovic. So really, I think Conte vindicated there.
Yeah, they were extremely impressive today, weren't they, Matteo?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I thought they were best in every single department against the Milan side that now has lost four times in 2021. But we've been saying for weeks that Inter are the Scudetto favorites. I think that the fact that they don't play in Europe, the fact that Conte can't even argue about the Thursday matches tiring out his players. He has a whole week to prepare these games. And you can see that they just looked fresher. They were winning all the 50-50s. They just looked like a better side, I think, top to bottom. And for Milan trying to not prevent too many spaces at the back, that's exactly what happened. Romelu Lukaku once again showing that he might be the most devastating striker in the open field when he's running at defenders. He torched Alessio Romagnoli. And he's been absolutely world-class now for two seasons. So for all the nonsense that he doesn't do it in the big games, that he doesn't have a touch, that he can't create, this was the biggest game of the season. This might have been Inter's biggest domestic game in about a decade, because this is the first time since 2011 that Milan and Inter played when they were first and second. Inter just extended their lead plus four, and Lukaku was the best player on the pitch.
Do you agree, Jurgen?
I totally agree with Mateos. Absolutely. It was huge, huge, huge. The timing of this win is extremely important. Obviously, as we all know, they're out of Europe. They're out of the Coppa Italia, so they can only solely focus on the Scudetto, on the championship. But this is still not easy. It's not easy to beat AC Milan, you know, 3-0 in such a way that they did today. They dictated everything. They were all over them. I mean, I felt a little bit sorry for Zlatan Ibrahimovic. There were three center backs from Inter. They were just on top of him, you know, Bastoni, De Vrij. You know, he could barely see a ball. I would say also the midfield from AC Milan was completely outperformed by Inter's midfield. So this was a very well-deserved win. And psychologically, as I said before, it keeps you now on the right track. It's still a way to go. I mean, yes, it's 4 points of a lead, but and anything can happen. But I think, you know, they're on the right track to win the championship.
Meanwhile, Matteo, what's happened to Milan?
They've fallen back down to earth. This was the worry the entire first half of the season. I feel like we talked about this so much every week. Is this going to continue? Can this genuinely go on like this, like what we saw in 2020, where Milan went almost 30 games undefeated in Serie A? They showed plenty of character. They would always bounce back from adversity. And now, four losses. I'm fine with the losses against Juventus and Atalanta. And Stefano Pioli came out and said that he thought the only real loss that Milan deserved to not pick up any points was last weekend against Spezia. I wouldn't necessarily agree. I thought Atalanta deserved to win against Milan. But even in this game, Inter were better in every department. And for this Milan side that has now gotten back so many of their key players, and you think of Hakan Çalhanoğlu, who was injured for so long, and so important. Yes, they got back Benassetti. He also got injured in the Red Star game on Thursday, but Ibrahimovic is back. They had their first choice center back pairing, and it's almost gone back to how it was before 2020, where they just can't seem to pick up points in these big games. Is it worrying? I mean, I think before the season, any Milan fan, anyone maybe from the club itself would have signed on the dotted line to finish in fourth place. They've been punching above their weight, and you know what it reminds me of, Dan? The Lazio situation after the post-lockdown era, they were 1 point behind Juventus, but then because of the congested calendar, they didn't have the depth, they didn't have the quality of Juventus, and they fell off the pace. I feel like this is what's happening now with Milan, and the fact that they're also playing in the Europa League, they just don't have the talent that Inter do, and Juventus to a lesser extent, but Juventus aren't playing up to their capabilities.
Gab, we're in a situation where Milan could genuinely not finish in the top four.
No, and I don't get all this doom and gloom. I mean, first of all, look, it's 4 points. It's not 10 points. It's 4 points, right? We talk about, ooh, the Europa League. Milan might not be in the Europa League this time next week. So that excuse will go out the window. They were missing Benacer, who I think is absolutely critical to this team functioning. I think if Pioli to do it again, maybe you play something like Rafael Leao, you get a little bit more front foot in a game like this. And you lost to a very good Inter side where everything clicked. But I think there's still a lot to come from this season. I think they addressed the depth in January for precisely that reason, bringing in other players from Tomori to Mate. So I think, you know, Milan are still up there. I think they're still fighting for the Serie A title. And we know how inconsistent Inter can be and have been in the past. So, no, I think this race is going down to the wire.
Jürgen, from a coach's perspective, how tricky is it where everything just seems to be going so well for such a long period as it was for Milan, and now the wheels are just starting to fall off slightly?
Yeah, from a coaching's perspective, really, you got to kind of take the signals. You have to understand the signals that just happened over the last, you know, couple of games with AC Milan, especially you're playing the Europa League pretty much with a completely different team like they did today against Inter. And when you get a lesson like today from Inter and it doesn't work out at all, obviously it should tell you something. So now it is very, very important for Stefano Pioli is really calm everybody down and keep them focused, keep them in the run. What worried me a little bit today was certainly that they were not only outplayed, they were also physically completely dominated by Inter. You know, if you look at the two center backs, Romagnoli and Kjaer, they lost so many one-on-one battles today against Lukaku and Martinez. That would worry me a little bit. So definitely they have to understand the signals that they received today from this game. And make sure that they're not sliding into a negative period.
Are you with Gab, Matteo? It's not all doom and gloom. They're still in the title race.
I don't
don't think it is all doom and gloom. The whole point is they finished top four. It's a very successful season. I think Inter is going to win the Scudetto. I've been saying it for a long time that they're the favorites. Yes, they're only 4 points off the pace, but based on the last month and a half, let's say, since 2021, the performances have completely changed. And this is after they got back some of their key players. They just don't look like the same side that they were in 2020. They look like they've fallen back down to earth. And yes, 4 points, but I mean, if you lose to Spezia like they did last weekend, that to me was the most troubling sign, because that was also a cruel reminder of what life was like for Milan for much of the 2010s, where they were outplayed and outclassed by teams that they had maybe 10 times the wage bill and that were fighting to even stay in the top flight. So last week was a reminder, and Jurgen made a really interesting point that this is the time for Stefano Pioli, who, by the way, historically has always started very well, and then things have tapered off. This is something that we've seen now in many different jobs that he's had in Serie A. Not saying that that's the case. I still think that Stefano Pioli has really squeezed every ounce of juice that he could out of this squad. But I really feel like this is the big breakaway now for Inter. And I just don't see Milan being able to catch them just based on Inter's overall talent, the depth, and that Antonio Conte seems to really figure out this team, that they're one of the most devastating counterattacking sides, and the defense has gotten a lot better.
Some nice goals in this game, definitely, but nothing compared to when these two teams met in 1991. Hey, Jurgen, not a bad finish from a young German striker here.
Oh! Yeah, I mean, when you get the chance to score a goal in such a game, and obviously those days we were having no issue with COVID, so the house was packed with 85,000. And I had kind of a stretch with a couple of games not scoring. So when this goal came along, I definitely enjoyed it, I can tell you.
Gab, you were what, 30 when this was going on? Do you remember it?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, yes. I do remember that goal. And, I remember... You know, some people may not know is that Jurgen was bought a year before he actually came to Italy, and Inter had been poor for a long time. And unfortunately for Jurgen, or maybe fortunately, the Inter side he joined had the season before without him had just won the Serie A title with a record number of points. And so all of a sudden they kind of chucked him in there and said, "Hey, top that!" And I don't know if he topped it, but he certainly left as a San Siro legend.
Thank you very much, boys. Just a reminder, more from Gab on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which drops on Monday. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's go to La Liga, shall we? Barcelona taking on Cadiz. Ah, Frank. 30 minutes into this one, penalty awarded as Pedri is brought down.
Yeah, initially, Barcelona probably think there's a foul at the top of the box. Referee allows play to continue. Cadiz maybe get a little sloppy at the back, whichever way. Pedri does well to pick pockets and then get upended. Referee no choice but to point to the spot.
Panic from Messi.
They don't come much cooler than that from Lionel Messi, 12 yards out.
However... Barcelona looked like that would be enough to get the win, but then Longley kicking out and it's a penalty.
Yeah, Longley, he doesn't anticipate the striker coming around him. He's slow to it, throws a lazy leg at it, and again, referee no choice but to point to the spot.
Yep, Fernandez steps up, no mistake from him, and it's 2 points dropped, isn't it, for Barcelona.
Again,
again as it finishes 1-1. Barcelona 20 shots, could only manage that one goal from the penalty spot. And of course, to rub salt into the wounds, the fact it was Atleti who lost yesterday against Levante, Real Madrid with the win yesterday, closing the gap to 3 points. And the gap then between Real Madrid and Barca now 5 points. Barca, though, with a game in hand. Let's welcome into the show, shall we, Ali Moreno, to reflect on what happened at the Camp Nou today. Ali, what happened at the Camp Nou today?
Well, Dan, first of all, I just want to take the time to welcome Nedim to the show. What a great honor is to have him on the show.
He hasn't mentioned that you won the World Cup,
appreciate his presence. Oh, okay. Well, then forget it, Nedim. Forget it. All right? I don't want to see you again.
He said your MLS titles are worthless.
Look. Look, I find that Barcelona today was the picture of what has become so frustrating about this team. Following what was a collapse and a debacle against PSG in Champions League, you may have thought, okay, Atletico Madrid has given you the best opportunity available for you to get back into this title race. A gift. Here you go, Barcelona. And you're playing Cadiz at home. A team that struggles defensively. A team that struggles to create opportunities. This should be the moment in which you say, you know what? Yes, we are in this title race. And what you saw from this team was lack of urgency. They score a penalty kick by Lionel Messi, and yes, they had 20 shots, but it was all very speculative. It was all very sort of slow and predictable, and you don't really see a team that says, you know what, we're back in this. Yes, we lost to PSG. Yes, that was humiliating, and you know what, somebody's gonna pay for this, and we're gonna take it out on somebody, and Cadiz is gonna be that team. No, none of that. Yes, they were winning the game 1-0, and yes, they seem to be in control, but it was just 1-0, and we know, because we have seen this team play time and time again, they're gonna give up a chance, they're gonna give up an opportunity, there's gonna be a mistake, and because we've seen that time and time again, I was not surprised that Lenglet, of all people, because again, he has made mistake after mistake after mistake this season, He commits a foul, it's a penalty, 1-1, and whatever hope there was for Barcelona to get back into this race, well, hope is fleeting, hope is gone.
Yeah, very much so. So is it Real Madrid or Atleti, Ali? Are we at that stage?
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but say what you will about Real Madrid and how they play and unwatchable they were against Valladolid, they found a way. They got 3 points. They are now putting pressure on Atletico Madrid, and Atletico Madrid is staring right back at Real Madrid. And guess what? March 7th, who plays? Oh, yes, it's Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. And there it is, the opportunity for Real Madrid to truly get back into this. They win that game, and now we're dancing. Now we're cooking. So yes, as it is, as we stand right now, it is clearly Atletico Madrid or Real Madrid. Barcelona had a chance to get on that train, and then they said, no, not for us, not right now. We're not feeling it. And they had an opportunity to do so, wasted chance.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. A tough week then for Barcelona, of course, midweek losing against PSG. PSG in action in Ligue 1 today, taking on Monaco. And what a result this would be for the visitors. Monaco with the win. Let's show you exactly how they got it done. 6 minutes into this one. Aguilar plays it into Diop, 1-0.
Yeah, and this is just routine. Down the left-hand side, deep cross, ball back across. Somehow, PSG thin at the back, exposed.
6 minutes into the second half, it gets worse for Mauricio Pochettino's side. Maripan making it 2-0.
And look at the number of blue shirts of PSG back in the box. Break up the initial cross, try to pass their way out to trouble or dribble their way out to trouble, get themselves in it even deeper.
The star of the show, of course, Kylian Mbappe against Barcelona. Question marks as to whether or not he should be sent off here. Take a look at the replay. It was just the yellow that was issued. You can just see here.
I think the initial arm is flailing, and then there's a kick out. It could have been seen as two different incidents. Could have been a whole lot worse.
So what that all means, Lille, 3 points clear of Lyon in second, 4 points clear of the defending champions, PSG, as we welcome back to the show, Frank Leboeuf. Frank, it was such a good week for PSG, and they just threw it all down the toilet.
Yeah, and there may be two explanations that we can give. The first one is they were still in the Nou Camp, and you know how important it was to win against Barcelona, especially over there, you know, after some years ago, a punishment that they got from Barcelona with the remontada. So maybe they were still in heaven and never came back down to earth. And the second possibility is, you know, I never seen Paris Saint-Germain being as good as they've been against Barcelona. But it was maybe the exception to the rule because for the rest of the season, they've been very average. And so maybe they came back to average and they've been punished by Monaco, very, very well organized Monaco, just deserve to lose. Just so you know, Mbappe was the hero in the Nou Camp. I don't want to say he went from hero to zero, but didn't have a shot on target today. Wow. No one. So, like the others, it was a very average Paris Saint-Germain, and they have to get back into the business if they want to win the second leg, which I think they're going to do, but also maybe get another title with the Ligue 1.
Well, that's it, Frank. We got a proper title race in France, don't we?
We have a good fight, and you know, I explained that that in England, you know, I thought when I said that that the maybe the title will go to another club that we didn't expect, that maybe in Germany as well, in Spain as well, in Italy as well, and maybe in France because of the pandemic. I still think that Paris Saint-Germain can catch Lille and Lyon, but you know, Lille are doing great, and they might be out of the European campaign very soon. So they're going to be very concentrated on the Ligue 1, and they can surprise everybody. So we'll see. It's interesting. It's in fact the pandemic, and we have to accept that. You know, everybody will have to fight hard.
Meanwhile, in Germany, big opportunities then for Leipzig to close the gap on the top of the table after, as we mentioned, Bayern Munich lost to Eintracht Frankfurt. 28 minutes into this one. What a goal it is.
Goodness me.
How good is that?
This is incredible. Sabitza gets us a long way out. And despite the pressure coming late,
it's like a balloon.
It just sat up so well for him, and he was able to get under it, able to get it to dip.
Wow.
There's nothing
Keeper's
anybody
got to do
can be of yourself.
Mugheli then makes it 2-0 here.
Yeah, and this is another very good finish. Ball given away.
Tyler just Adams outside his
own box, but the finish though. Doesn't have a lot to hit there, Mukiele, and does it so well.
And then the victory guaranteed. Willy Orban with a header to make it 3-0. Nice response, of course, after that defeat against Liverpool midweek. And what that means is that we've got a title race in Germany now. Leipzig 2 points behind Bayern Munich. Jürgen, I say we've got a title race. We do, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. And that's really, really exciting. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we thought, OK, Bayern Munich is just running off. There were 7 points clear, and it looked like it will get a little bit boring in the Bundesliga. But now with the recent results, Bayern Munich coming back from Qatar, basically, then tying at home against Bielefeld, then losing against Frankfurt now, it brings things back into a real race. And this is exciting. I think RB Leipzig, they have the roster to really go all the way to the end and give them a real fight. They're doing well. They're playing real good football. High energy football, and so it's exciting. It's exciting for the Bundesliga.
Yeah, of course, for the neutral, it's great. And of course, a contributing factor as to why they could push Bayern all the way is they probably now will be eliminated from the Champions League, which means that they can solely focus on the league.
Yeah, but I think that RB Leipzig over the last 3-4 years, they really built a roster that is able to go in all 3 or 4 competitions. So no matter what happens in the Champions League, they are able really to keep up the tempo with Bayern if they have the belief. It's more kind of a mental aspect there that comes into play than the physical side of it.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What a brilliant game. Just 7 shots on target, 6 of them ending up in the back of the net. Atalanta then winning by 4-2. That puts them 4th in the table, level on points with Lazio, who won yesterday. Remember, Juventus in action on Monday. Well, Atalanta's focus will change then to the Champions League this week. They're taking on Real Madrid. According to the bookies, Real Madrid are big favourites, 15-8 on. Meanwhile, Atalanta, 11-8. Let's welcome back, shall we, Matteo, Jürgen and Gav to the show. I tell you what, Gav, if I was a gambling man, I'd be jumping on Atalanta right now.
Yeah, I mean, because what you're seeing too is Real Madrid have an absolute rash of injuries and a very thin starting 11. And by the way, is pretty much what Napoli had today. And you saw what Atalanta could do against them. I think one of the mistakes teams make when they play against Atalanta in Europe, and we saw it last season, is if they play off them, if they don't go and engage them. And I think by necessity, Real Madrid may have to play that way, which obviously sets things up very, very nicely for Atalanta. But let's not kid ourselves, though. Real Madrid are still favourites.
I don't think they are, man. I genuinely don't think they are. Benzema probably won't play in this game. As you mentioned, they got so many injuries. Atalanta looking good. Real Madrid, I genuinely think that Atalanta can get it done, Matteo.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance. Listen, they have absolutely nothing to lose. Real Madrid are missing half their back line. Karim Benzema is injured. Yes, they have a full midfield, but Atalanta are going to go into this game and play the way that we saw them play last season, where they live and die by their style under Giampiero Gasperini. Think of the way that Atalanta played against Paris Saint-Germain, that even when Kylian Mbappe came off the bench and there was Neymar as well in the second half, they kept pushing players forward, and Atalanta were absolutely exhausted at the end. This isn't a side that's going to sit back against anyone, certainly not against a Real Madrid attack that has been absolutely depleted. So I expect Atalanta to go for it like they do in absolutely every single game, and it does also put a big strain on their defense, but that's just the way that they have played every single game under Gasperini. That's their style, and it's also why they've been punching massively above their weight.
It's going to be interesting, Jürgen, isn't it? See how this one plays out over the two legs.
Oh, definitely. I think, as Matteo said rightfully, they have nothing to lose, Atalanta. And I think it's a huge piece as well that they experienced Champions League football last season. They went far. They actually deserve to go even further than they went at the end of the day. And that gives them a lot of confidence. You know, it's not that they have now too much respect for Real Madrid. They certainly have respect, but not too much. So if they go in there with their confidence and a high level of aggressiveness, I definitely think Atalanta has a chance to beat Real Madrid.
Meanwhile, Juventus are in action tomorrow. That game against Crotone is live on ESPN Plus at 2:30 Eastern. And it's interesting, first time we've really had a chance to chat with the boys about Juve and terrible performance, of course, midweek against Porto. And it's a running theme, isn't it? You take a look at who've eliminated them over the years. Obviously, you go back to the quarterfinals, Real Madrid, then Ajax the next year, and then last year, Lyon eliminating them in the round of 16. Gab, you just reflect on that game against Porto, and it's very difficult, really, apart from the fact that it was only 2-1, to take any positives away from it.
Yeah, I think the only positive takeaway is a learning experience. And Dan, I have a little something to say here. All those people, remember that little run that Juve had leading into this when they were being more defensive and, you know, they were defending deeper and they were nicking a goal at the other end, or Ronaldo did something unthinkable and so they got the win. They said, oh, look, it's like Allegri's Juve. Oh, look, it's more balanced and all this nonsense. It's not more balanced. It's nonsense. And when you see, and the reason Juve don't want to play that way anymore is what we saw against Porto. You give up a stupid goal at the beginning of the half, out of the blue, and then all of a sudden you're chasing. And you're not mentally set up to do that. You insist on playing a 36-year-old Giorgio Chiellini twice in a week, and then he's got to come off. And this is the problem. This is why they cannot play that way in Europe. Hopefully this is even more of a wake-up call, and hopefully the reaction here is to double down on that. I still think they can advance. The Chiesa goal, I think, is a game changer in terms of the away goals rule. But goodness me, you got to ditch the past and you have to stick with this plan and simply go out and figure out how you're going to do it better. Otherwise, you're never going to grow.
Matteo?
So the reason why they gave the ball away, and it was Rodrigo Bentancur at the sit a little bit back deeper, is when there's no Leo Bonucci making those passes, they don't really have that outlet from the back. And I know Bonucci's had a poor season defensively, but he still has that passing range. And Bentancur isn't really someone who plays in that position. And he's been making that mistake all season long. He's not a deep line playmaker. I think what we have seen, though, is Arthur is actually a pretty big miss for this Juventus side. Without Arthur, they only play two central midfielders, is what we've seen now for the last few matches, and they're just not as balanced as they were when they had three central midfielders and Weston McKennie, who's not fully fit either. It's just a completely different squad. The 4-4-2 that Pirlo has used at times because of the injuries in the center of the midfield is the same unbalanced team that we saw in the first half of the season that was inconsistent and not picking up the results they should have picked up.
And well, let's take a look at how the bookies have things set as to who is going to go through. Remember, Porto with a 2-1 lead, Juventus with that key away goal, and as a result, they are still quite heavy favourites. 13-8 on, Porto at 6-5. Jürgen, who would you have going through?
I still think that Juventus will manage it. You know, obviously a 1-0 is enough to go through. But it's also... We still forget, you know, with Pirlo, this is a transition year, and they will go through these kind of up and downs, and try to figure out, you know, how to kind of build the team for next year as well. So I still think that they can make it.
Matteo, when you hear transition year, do you like that phrase?
I mean, Jürgen is right. It feels like a transition. But when you have Cristiano Ronaldo on the books, you should never be in a rebuilding mode. When you have a player that is there for only a limited amount of time, that you got to win the Champions League because you were facing teams consistently that had that once-in-a-generation forward man that changed the course of a game. So it's unfortunate. It really is. Because you have this guy that you brought in for an objective, which, by the way, you also need luck in the Champions League. I mean, just look at PSG's five-year plan now becoming a 10-year plan. It's not as easy as just spending more money than everyone else. You need other things to go your way. You need the draws to go your way, a little bit of luck and all that stuff. But it really does feel like Juventus can't make any excuses. They still have a very good team that has made mistakes. The sporting director has made mistakes, hasn't gotten the right midfielders, given the top-heavy type of side that they have, the quality that they have in defense. Yes, they've dealt with injuries, but so has every other team. And it does feel a little bit like a team that wasn't assembled in the best way possible, that has a glaring weakness, which if you look at the three best teams in Europe, let's say, they don't have the same kind of weakness in any department like Juventus have in the midfield.
Gab, you agree?
That Juventus have a worse midfield than the three best teams in Europe? 100%.
What about equally, the point that Matteo made? Can you ever be in a transitional year when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in the team?
You have to be, because you simply have to be, because the old way wasn't working. So it's up to you to figure out how to change it. You cannot spend your way out of it. That ship has sailed. All that money, you have already spent it. Cristiano wants to win, but Cristiano is also not a dolt. He would much rather play on a team where there are players around him, where there are players that are supporting him, where there are players who are committed to going forward. Good teams know how to attack and how to defend. This is another thing that bugs me. Porto are running away with a Portuguese league. They've got like a double-digit lead, so they attack all the time in Portugal. But look, when it comes to Europe, they know when to defend and they know when to attack. That's where you even want to get to.
Are Porto second in the league, Gab? They're quite a bit behind, aren't they? But there we are. Let's not dwell on that.
Right, well, whatever.
Whatever. Facts, Dan. let's look ahead to the game on Tuesday. Lazio taking on Bayern. When the draw was made, it was like a given. Bayern, best team in Europe. They'll go through, no problems. The bookies still think that's 7-1 on. Lazio, 9-2. Jürgen, of course, Bayern are favourites. However, we have seen a lot of problems, especially at the back, consistently over the last few weeks. Epitomized, of course, yesterday in that defeat against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, I think obviously they're still favorites and still are the team to beat in the Champions League. But they have some issues at the moment. They struggle a little bit. They're tied at home against Bielefeld, and now they lost in Frankfurt. And they came back from the World Club Championship there in Qatar, tired and had some issues with that trip as well. Some arguments going in now with the flight that they had to take down to Doha, where they were not allowed to depart from Berlin when they played the game before they entered that tournament, and so on. So it might be a golden moment for Lazio. Who knows? Maybe that's a moment to catch Bayern Munich right now on the wrong foot. But you know, I expect them still to dominate, and I expect them to go through. Even if I gotta say that Lazio has a good moment right now. They played really, really well with, against Inter last week, as we saw. They were with a better team, actually. So it will be a highly interesting game.
And similar to Atalanta, I suppose, Matteo, in that they've got nothing really to lose going into this.
Yeah, and it's funny when you read the German press that you look at this game on paper and you see Lazio hasn't been in the Champions League for 13 years, but the German press, and I don't think even Bayern are too thrilled about this draw, because if there's something that Lazio do very well, is actually Bayern's weakness that they can leave themselves exposed at the back, that defensively they haven't been perfect. And then you look at Simone Inzaghi's Lazio, a team that is one of the best counterattacking sides in Europe, really, when you look at the way that they can pass through Milinkovic and Luis Alberto. Ciro Immobile is one of the best strikers at timing his run perfectly past the final defender and receiving the ball in stride. That's what Lazio do so well. They can close themselves up. They can hit out. They can play vertically. They have some excellent midfielders in Luis Alberto Milinkovic. And then Ciro Immobile, who's coming off a 36-goal season. So it feels like they're looking at Bayern and saying, hold on a second, there is a path to victory and to shock everyone in Europe.
Gabby's smiling and not rolling his eyes as you speak, Matteo. This is a first.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah, look, the Bayern side I saw, especially in the first half against Eintracht, if those guys, and Eintracht, of course, were flying and whatever, but if those guys show up against Lazio, they're in serious trouble. Without Thomas Muller, they can't press, and it means they can't defend high up the pitch, which means, as Matteo said, either they leave big holes at the back or they're forced to somehow play differently, to set up a little bit deeper. They've got a lot of guys who are incredibly inconsistent right now. They're expecting more from, like Leroy Sané. Lazio know how to prepare for these games. Now, all that said, could also happen that, you know, Joshua Kimmich or Lewandowski do their thing in the first 5 minutes, Lazio are forced to attack, and then they get destroyed on the break. So, you know, anything can happen. But this Bayern side aren't the Bayern side who became champions of Europe last August. They have a lot of problems. Without Thomas Muller, I think they're a shadow of themselves right now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for everyone who has been on. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka Hislop is with us in the studio. We also welcome back to the show Frank LeBeouf is here, as is Nadim Anua. Nadim, how is your internet connection? Because it was terrible during the show. Let's try it now.
You tell me. Is any better?
Yeah, that seems a lot better. I think, as this is the first time you've been on with us, you have to take us on a little tour of what is behind you, because I notice a captain's armband. That's got to be got QPR days.
That's right, yeah, that's right. So this is going to be a work in progress over the weeks, but okay. Up here we've got a QPR player of the month.
No, other way around. Oh, it's like Steve Nicol again. Oh.
there's a poster of myself and Diego Valeri somewhere around
yes,
here.
Yes, that's there. Yeah, I've be rubbish my, at the I've weather. My, right.
I've got my bass guitar. You know, it's just the usual things, well, but you'll see.
What are the two other things next to the QPR band?
So next to the QPR band, we have, I think it's a goal of the season. Goal of the season for Sunderland.
Wow.
So you, but you didn't expect to hear that.
No.
And as well as that, we have a Utah Utes helmet, miniature helmet from my time in Utah.
And then what's
there
that?
You go.
What's the weird math? Is that like geographical locations where you met Frank LeBeuf?
Coordinates.
What is that?
These are coordinates of exactly where I live. So if somebody wants to try and figure it out, good luck to you.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, thanks for giving us that.
A treat. Frank LeBeuf is with us. So he's going to feel left out.
World Cup winner, Frank LeBeuf.
World Cup winner, Frank LeBeuf.
World Cup winner, Frank LeBeuf.
He sent me like a 10-minute video of Chelsea beating Spurs today. So I didn't have enough things to watch. I have no time to watch videos of you scoring goals.
He watched it, Frank. He watched every minute of it.
Yeah, right. What happened in that game that you wanted me to see?
Just two big assists from Frank LeBeuf, like a quarterback. 40 yards passes to Petrescu and Torreira and Reflo. That's it. Go on. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't watch that. Send me videos of assists. Shaka, is this West Ham team better than the one you played with? Do you think they can finish in the top four if Lingard keeps playing like this?
They can. They absolutely can finish in the top four, given the inconsistencies of everybody else around them. Let's see where they finish in terms of judging it against the, what was it, 98-99 team?
I don't know. You played in it.
I did.
You should know.
It was a long time ago, Dan.
Yes, it was. Nathan, should Thiago be sold since he cannot play punk rock football that is in Liverpool's DNA?
I wouldn't necessarily want to blame him for what's happened this season, but I think he does need to adapt a little bit more. I think the Premier League is proving to be quite a big test for him, but you know, this season isn't necessarily going to define his career, and I'd expect more from him next year, but in a Liverpool shirt.
Frank?
I agree with Nedham. I mean, you shouldn't judge, you know, a player on the first season, especially with that. But we are going all through, and he's going to adapt, and he's a fantastic player, so he's going to get better. He's going to go more vertical. It's what he has to do if we want to be in the middle of the park for Liverpool.
After a comprehensive win for Inter today, Shaka, what's the best, worst derby experience that you had in your career?
I don't know. Probably the worst derby experience was Newcastle Sunderland with no away fans. Because it was just so heated between the two sets of fans that the first season that we played, which I think was 96, 97, they didn't allow away fans into either ground. That was awful. That was simply awful. The following season they did, and it was a whole lot better. It just makes for a better atmosphere.
Best derby you played in, Frank? Chelsea Spurs, 6-1. Two assists.
No, that was my first Chelsea Wimbledon, if we can consider it a derby, with the crazy gang, with Vinnie Jones, and I was headbutted by somebody, I don't remember his name, and I had a big bum, and Vinnie Jones came to me and said, "Hey, Frankie, welcome to England, you're going to enjoy it." And we lost 3-2, I was awful, and that was quite a nightmare, but at the end, a good memory.
Nedham, best derby memory?
The best one for me would be when we beat Manchester United at Old Trafford in 2008 when we were bang out of form. And, you know, I don't want to take full credit for it, but I think that's when City's legacy started. Let's just call that. Let's just say it like that.
Nothing to do with the money.
Nothing at all, no. That was the exact moment.
That's the game they were watching on. We're going to invest in City. Is getting subbed off after already being subbed on prior the most embarrassing feeling in football? Did you or one of your teammates ever have this experience? Nathan, let's start with you.
Never happened to me, never in a million years. How dare you even ask me that question? But one thing I'll say is worse. I think when I see people get subbed off in the first half, I think that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Maybe 20, 30 minutes in and something has to change and you're that person. I've seen that happen to a few and break a few.
Frank?
No, I never seen that. I never witnessed that. You know, for me, I've been like three times in my career with the club being a substitute, so I don't know what you're talking about, you know? By the way, Dan, I ordered for you the third gear of Manchester City. today that they were wearing. I think it will be very nice. My wife, well, your wife told me that it will suit you as a pyjama.
Really?
It will be very good. Yeah. I just ordered that for you. Do you like it? Or do you prefer, I don't know?
Frank.
Some others.
Frank, I don't wear pyjamas.
Yeah. Oh, well, that I don't want to know.
Even that's not his kit. Shaka, have you ever seen a keeper subbed off because he's been so bad?
No.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever...
I don't think I've seen a keeper
subbed off. That is proper.
I think I've seen a keeper subbed off. I remember playing for Newcastle. We played at Stamford Bridge. I'm trying to remember who it was. Les was tearing somebody up.
Right.
And they got subbed after 25 minutes.
Wow.
So to Nedon's point, getting subbed in the first half, 25 minutes, you get the hook. That's bad.
It is. Premier League question, Shaq. Which team is most likely to get relegated? Newcastle or Fulham?
Fulham. Hmm.
And they're doing all right, though. They put a little run together.
They're playing well. What's the
gap now at the bottom?
Like 6 points from
that.
I don't think it's
less than that, Shaq.
I think Fulham are playing better than they...
3 points.
It was not.
It was going to be like it is, Shaq.
Nope. Change it.
No. Three points. Newcastle in trouble.
Fulham.
Nedim, do you agree? Fulham?
I think Fulham are more likely to go down, yes. Because I think Newcastle don't need to play well to win games, whereas Fulham do. So going into this last bit of the season, I think Newcastle have a better chance.
Oh, Shaq, we're going to
You made me nervous there, Dan. I have to check to make sure now.
I'm not lying to you. Why would I do that? It is 3 points. It is definitely 3 points.
Listen. I don't trust you, Dan.
I don't.
Right? I'm checking for myself. You right? Made me very nervous all of a sudden.
What, by telling you the facts?
Yes.
Right. I thought you're a big Newcastle fan. You don't know how.
I checked this a couple of days ago. It was 8 points.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, Shaka, your favourite kit of all time.
My favourite kit of all time.
Yep.
What, you mean kit that I wore, or just general?
You can. Give whatever answer you would like.
Goalkeeper's kit or free kit?
I don't know, Shaq. It's a simple question.
You asking the question.
It's not me. JPPR is.
Well, you are. You're the middleman. You asked me the question.
No, I just merely asked the question, say goodbye, go home. That's it.
Okay. Favourite kit of all time. We'll just go with Newcastle. Simple black and white stripes as an all free kit. Favourite goalkeeper kit. You know, I had this discussion with somebody the other day. You know, kit I really... Do you remember the Newcastle goalkeeper kit with the skyline in the background?
Yes.
It gets a lot of stick, but I loved it, you know.
Oh, really?
I thought it was great. Oh. I really did like it.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
You're welcome. So I think I've covered all bases there.
Look good in the championship next season.
What?
Nadim, favourite kit of all time?
I like the blue Brazilian one. I think it was 2002, which was worn by Ronaldo with the white stripe on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Either that one or the one which Manchester United wore in the mid-90s where they said they couldn't see each other.
Those are
probably two of my favourite kits. Yeah, those are two of my favourite kits.
Frank?
Liverpool 76, Keegan shirt or Dalglish shirt, the red one, fantastic. And at the same time, Saint-Etienne who played against, very shiny green shirt, fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic, 76 as well.
Oh,
yeah. But I can add so many others, like Brazil 70 World Cup and France 98. But I have that one.
Yes,
yeah, I have that one.
All roads were leading to that as the answer.
I want to say thank you to Nedim for mentioning that I'm a champion of the world. I like that when he does that on the show.
This is the way you should be introduced. You are champion of the world, Mr. Frank LeBeuf. That's it. That's simple. That's all it should be.
Yeah, and you see, and have you seen how Dan introduced me to the viewers? The guy who has a smelly breath. That's what he said today. That's what he said.
I said.
I'm 9,000 kilometers away from Dan Thomas, and the guy says I have a smelly breath. 9,000.
I actually said. You're like a bad smell that we can't get rid of, but you can interpret.
Yeah, well, okay. There is a slight difference, okay.
Nathan, who is your current favourite centre-back in the Premier League and why?
I would have to say right now Ruben Dias.
Yeah.
Because I think he's come into the league. He has no real experience of it. He's a young player, youngish type player, but he's gone in and the stuff that he's doing well is just competing, making it as hard as possible for the opposition, winning his duels and then keeping it simple. You know, some defenders who like to come in and play diagonals and all that stuff, that's great, but the art of defending is still alive, and to see somebody come in and be so successful with it kind of sums it up, and I'm very happy to see him there.
Frank, you were a defender.
I would agree with Nidham. I mean, that guy changed so much the face of Manchester City and the way they play. But I have to add Wesley Fofana from Leicester. I mean, Fofana is only 20. He's made a huge impact in the Premier League, in Leicester, in the defence. Very good, very good, talented player.
Who's your favourite centre-back, Shaq? Hmm?
Yeah, Wesley Fofana.
Yeah, right. For Nathan, what was the biggest culture shock when you moved to the United States to play for Real Salt Lake?
I think it was trying to understand, say, football or soccer or however, whatever you want to call it, around the world is a huge game. It's the most important game. Then all of a sudden I arrived in America. You'd barely even see it on TV. The level of importance completely diminishes. The way that you feel going into the games and the reaction after games is completely different. So you have to kind of adapt and, you know, get used to that. Like, you can still play well and work hard and all that stuff, but the consequences just feel that little bit different. Because there were times in my career where, to talk about derbies, we lost 5-1 to Newcastle one time when I was at Sunderland, and I didn't leave my house for a month. But wow, when you're in the USA, you can still walk out because people, you know, it's more enjoyable, let's say. It's more relaxed, and it can be competitive, but the consequences just aren't quite the same as when you play in leagues with like a 100-year history, and, you know, you have promotion, relegation, and stuff like that.
That's pressure, Shannon.
Nedum, I have a very good person. We can really help you with your ego issues since you play in the United States, and that we
okay.
Football is not the top of the if you want to.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. I understand what you're saying, but it's
no one else does.
As everybody, he's trying to insult me, but I understand where he's coming from. So it's not about me, it's about the game. No, it's always about the game. That's the difference, Frank, you see? It's always about the game. It's never about the individual.
I know, I agree with you. It's why never played in the United States.
It's very different.
What was the biggest culture shock for you when you moved here, Frank, to be an actor?
That nobody knew me. And I was in Los Angeles, where everybody thinks he's a bloody star. You know? The only guy who came with a bodyguard was Beckham. I think he came with a bodyguard in Los Angeles.
Oh.
I think everybody told him that it was unnecessary. No, the shock. I mean, I don't know. Nothing much. You know, I love United States. I wanted to go to the United States to discover the world, that part of the world, and I was very pleased. Never been. I accept every time I go to a country, I accept everything which goes with the country, so I have no problem with it. Oh.
Cosmopolitan, yeah, Frank.
You're disappointed.
Yes, I see that.
Shaq, what was it like for you? What was the biggest culture shock when you moved here? Where'd you go? FC Dallas?
Yeah. Well, one of the first things that hit me is, I remember me and my family, we landed in Dallas August 10th, 2006. We landed at 10 p.m. and the pilot said it was 98 degrees.
Right.
So to put that into Celsius, that's what, 31 Celsius, 30
degrees. Don't get about Celsius, yeah.
I'm just saying. Well, we're a global show, Dad.
Right.
I have to, you know, cater for everybody. Which, I mean, at 10 o'clock at night. So that kind of spoke to the heat in Dallas and my experience there. But Neta makes a really good point, and that's something that I never got used to. And especially during the regular season, even when you're lost, you know, you travel away, you go to all the different cities, and generally you'd overnight after the games, and there'd be a reserve game next morning, and you'd leave at some point during the day. But you'd play, even if you lost, everybody was still going out at night, you'd all go to a restaurant, have a few drinks, which I never, I mean, I only played for 18 months, but I never got used to that kind of, that, you know, we lost, no big deal, let's all just kind of go out and no real kind of professional repercussions, even personal. I found that weird.
That's it, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you, Frank. I look forward to my pyjamas arriving. Naden, welcome to the Madhouse. We'll be back tomorrow.
I won't. I'll be here.
Don't worry, Shaq. I'll be here.
I'm not here. I'm not on the camera thingy at
all. What are you going to do with yourself tomorrow?
I'm going to relax.
Really, Shaq? Yeah. How does Shaq at Hislop relax?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to relax very nicely indeed. Thank you very much.
Well, it is your birthday tomorrow.
It most certainly is.
So, are you 54?
I'm 48-ish.
3 years ago, you had a 50K kid. We made a big deal of it. That gave me 48.
Ish.
52,
49-ish.
52, I'm being told.
Late 40s-ish.
Right, well, happy birthday. Well,
thanks,
are you going to do anything nice for it?
Relaxing. What else do you need to do?
We can go have a nice dinner, I don't know, do something.
No, I'm not.
All right, what are you saying?
We're in a pandemic, Dan. Well, I don't know if you heard the news.
I went out for dinner last week. It's nice.
Yeah, but you're young. I'm at risk.
You're in the vulnerable category now.
Okay. Home.
All right, that's it. We will be back tomorrow for more.
I won't.
Why? What are you doing tomorrow, Shaq? Oh, happy birthday, Shaka. What a moment.